Top of the morning, you are listening to the Misunderstood Podcast. I am your man, Khosizile Mashogane, and as always, I'm here with my baby brother, Ukumo Khumalo. And today, we're having a conversation centered around, you know, how the wokest agenda has shaped how, in the 21st century, the individual views their perception of self. Mtunga, I'm passing on to you to lead us into this topic.
Now, what going, gang? No, I'm kidding.
You know what's funny? It's like me with my very pace and measured voice. So today we're going to be... Yo, what going? So the thing is...
Nah, exactly. It's exactly that. That's how we're moving. That's how we're popping. Look, I'm gonna have an interesting conversation today. And I think we're going to have an interesting conversation today because...
Yeah. Yo, this one's going to be controversial. This one's gonna be heavy. I can see my name on Twitter.
Yeah, no, this one's going to be heavy. It's going to be controversial. I mean, hopefully when this comes out, I'm the student affairs representative at my school.
Already.
So by then, either I'm getting cancelled for taking my tie away or people are going along the lines of we're moving. But I think... today's going to be an interesting conversation because we're actually going to be speaking about identity, the politics behind it, and what does it actually mean to be holden to an identity? Can you choose your identity? How do we decipher identity? I think to open us up very quickly, it's interesting that over the years, we've had people try to fight to remove themselves from an identity, to stop being bodied as part of someone or part of a unified thing. So black individuals fought not to be called black anymore. Colored individuals don't want to be identified by their race. People fought to be recognized as human. And the further we progress into society, we add more labels. We're not removing those labels.
Yeah.
So instead of being black, I've now got to say I'm a straight black male.
Cis, gendered, heterosexual, melanated. Cisgendered, heterosexual, melanated, big tooth, big nose, like there's two.
Yeah.
But now, like, it's
insane.
Respect my label, right? Where historically, like you said, people have fought to remove labels,
yeah,
right, and respect me as a human being, and now we say respect the label.
Yeah, that's true.
That and I identify myself with.
It's actually pretty interesting because I remember 2 weeks ago we had a debate about this, but I want to quote the most problematic man on earth, Dave Chappelle. And essentially what he says, and I think this was in his most recent stand-up comedy, on Netflix, he says, individuals remember their true identity when things get hard. And the way he explains it is that when we're all at a party and everything's vibing and people are talking about being gay and being whoever they are, white people are the first people to call the police and remember that they're white. And I think it speaks to how people have been able to opt out of their oppression and opt out of who they're trying to be.
Or opt into oppression.
Facts.
Right? It's a very nuanced debate because at no point is our objective here to, you know, denounce or speak negatively on someone's perception of self, right? We encourage everybody to embrace who they are and, you know, live your truth. That's what we're about here, living your truth. But part of living your truth is also understanding that critical debate and understanding of certain situations is crucial to a progressive society. And the wokest agenda kind of removes that, right? So, for instance, we're going to have a conversation about sexuality and how there are now numerous sexualities, no longer just the initial LGBTQAI,
but
now it's IA plus.
Yeah.
And the plus just means to infinity and beyond. And quite literally, that's what it seems like
it's becoming.
I came across to what for me was the most confusing gender identity I've ever come across, being a cisgendered, it was a trans masculine, femme. So this, for those that might not know, is someone who was once female, now going through the process of transitioning to identify and embody a male, but in their state of masculinity, they choose to present themselves in a feminine manner.
Yeah?
If you're confused, you heard me correctly. This is a woman, right? Or someone who was born female, has gone through the process of transitioning to be a male. But in their masculine state, once as a male, they decided that they want to manifest themselves as a man that dresses as a cross-dressing male. Right? And I'm like, that's the long way to exhibit yourself in your true sense, which is feminine. Right? Trans-masculine femme is... So for me, it was confusing. It was confusing. And these are the nuances of how far is the wokest agenda, you know, pushing people to identify themselves as other, right? And choosing an oppression. Because it seems like that's where society is going, right? Mm. We choose an oppression. We choose to other ourselves. When, to be honest, there's no need for that. Because true oppression is not anything anyone should desire.
Facts.
Right? And I think that people of color will attest to that. The gay community
will attest to that,
right? And even within the LGBTQAI plus community, there is a discrepancy and, you know, a little friction in how people relate to certain issues, because it's like, my struggle is deeper than yours, and you should understand that, because your struggle is, you know, highlighted only now because of a, like I said, a leftist agenda or political agenda to push a certain narrative onto society. And essentially, I'm like, to what extent, though, do we continue to remove the, you know, respect of someone quite simply because they are a person, to now having to, you know, tiptoe around someone and navigate nuances in which are so complex in understanding that by simply questioning, you are now labeled a bigot. Am I wrong for not understanding what a trans masculine femme is? And I'm not, if you are trans masculine femme, I'm honestly using you as the example right now, quite simply because you are the most recent, you know.
Yeah.
Gender identity in which I've come across, which I did not understand. By no means am I trying to invalidate you. If you wish to educate me, my IG is k.mashukhani, and I feel free to drop me a DM to explain further. Don't fight with me, educate me.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Can I say, though, just on that, about the fight, don't fight me, educate me. That line is being blurred so much, and I think it's the same thing you say. Like, are you, like, we've gotten to a point where people fear questioning, and like people fear learning. I mean, one of the things that always interests me is how, and I think this is an issue with wokeism, is how we mistaken things to be true and how we make them fact very quickly.
Facts.
When in reality they aren't. But beyond that is this idea that we have such a herd culture that we lose the value and reasoning behind why we do certain things. As an individual who considers himself not highly educated on the queer community, but I tend to dabble here and there just to hear what's happening. Because I think I like the equality for all and everything, and something. Okay, Khosi, I knew Khosi.
That sounded so
Yeah.
Like, I just like to dabble here. What are you talking about?
No, not like that. Not like that. I am definitely not a person who dabbles like that. But the thing that's always caught my eye, and I think it's caught a lot of our eyes because it's been something that's been included in Instagram, is this idea of pronouns. Pronouns initially were used to ensure that trans individuals could be recognized as being a specific gender without having to mention that they were trans. Mm. So an individual who transitioned from woman to female,
I don't know.
From woman to male, no longer had to be recognized as a trans male, but we could be recognized as a male. But what I find interesting is how we've lost that value. And now people just do it, but have used it as a way to now exhibit their identity. It's no longer about trans individuals. We hear things such as like Z-Zerts and all other things. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
But you know why that is though?
Why?
I mean, it's when you start having an absurd conversation, you know, the only more absurdity can follow. And I'm not saying that transgenderism is absurd.
Yeah.
Right? My views on transgenderism is that that is a real life struggle.
True.
That people go through. Right? That you feel that you are entrapped in a body that is not yours. And I can respect that wholeheartedly. I've got nothing against transgenders. Right? But for me, it's the conversation now when we get to the, you know, I think it's 57 genders or 53 genders.
50, yes.
I'm like, I can count male, I can count female, I can count
intersex.
Trans male, trans female, intersex. That's 5 genders on my hand that I am comfortable to say, if we're counting how many genders exist in society, kite odi 5. Intersex, your reproductive organs are, you know, you've got the characteristics of both male and female.
Fair.
Male, you were born male, you identify as male, that's what you are because your biology and, you know, your psychology says so.
Yeah.
Female, because your biology, psychology says so. Trans male, you are born a female, that's what your biology says, but your psychology and identity says other. I can understand that. And irrespective of how I have to work my head around it, I understand it, I respect it, and, you know, I praise you for living your truth. Trans,
male, same thing,
you know, just across the gender. Now, I'm at 5. How do I times this by 10, then add 7?
This is the thing, though. What defines gender? And that's what a lot of
you... Because I'm like, you know, I can't even, by no, like, I can't even stretch my mind to fathom what the 6th would be.
I think I can. I think...
Maybe I'm small-minded, but I really can't find the 6th, like, legitimate gender. So I then ask, like, if I can't find or understand 6, how are we then telling society that there's 57? And that's the absurdity that I'm talking about, right? When you have a conversation that's rooted in absurdity, only more absurdness can follow. And that's the stars, Z's.
But
No, honestly, fair.
I mean, my most problematic one, but one of my favorite ones that I always die at, is what you call it. My pronouns are attack helicopter. I know it's problematic, and I don't think it's okay, but I just think it is. It's a good time to have a laugh. But I think I'm gonna join team work for a quick second. Yeah.
Yeah.
And say,
please do so.
To an extent, I get it though. And it's weird because, you know, the fights of race is a construct, gender is a construct, all of the things that we look at, right? Male, yeah. Female roles. They argue that gender is a construct. So it does mean that to an extent, if I don't believe in the gender construct, I should be able to choose. But beyond that, I should also be able to decide how I express my gender. And this is, I think, what we must like separate. Expressing your gender versus the gender you've been given at birth, two different things. As a male, I get to choose how I get to express my gender. And that expression for some people is how we define gender. It's no longer about the scientific thing that's assigned to you at birth, but rather the expression of that. Which is why I can see an argument, not for 57. 57's a bit far for me. Because I'm also like 57's a bit much. But I can see an argument for people who say gender fluidity is a thing. I can see an argument for people who say I don't have a gender. And it's in those conversations that I can say it's not necessarily confined to, like, you have to be one of these 5 categories.
Hold on, I can respect that, you see. And once more, I've been educated.
Yeah.
I will concede that those who say they are non-binary make sense to me. I can understand that, right? Because when you say gender is a construct, I don't agree with that statement, but I agree with the concept that I believe is behind it.
Yeah.
Right? Which is that the perception of gender roles in society, right,
is a
construct.
For sure.
So when we've got things that we deem are feminine and therefore belong to females, as a man, if you like them, right, and you feel that you, I believe that like society then in, you know, 20th century society boxes you.
Yeah.
And says, you know, you a weird man because you like feminine things. In the 21st century, I'm like what you like.
Yeah.
Right? So if you a male who is more feminine, that's okay. Right? And if you feel that you're fluid in that, that maybe today I'm feminine and tomorrow I'm masculine, that's all right as well. You know, nobody is, you know, clear cut, one sided, 100% down one path. I do believe that, you know, non-binary people have a place. So there, I was wrong. There is a sixth. And is non-binary and gender fluid the same?
No. So non-binary means that you don't identify. Gender fluid means that you're on a spectrum.
Okay, but then when you say you don't identify with either or, it just means that you can pick and choose.
No. So non-binary implies that I'm not female, I'm not male, but I don't have a...
So and then...
category? Character.
Why are you laughing? I'm actually trying to understand this shit, dog. So it's like,
no, because you just said you're just, and I was like, and like, yeah, now what?
So like non-binary, you're a human being.
You're essentially...
You exist in your own bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
And that's all you are.
Whereas gender fluid means that I exist on a spectrum between male and female.
Between male and female. Okay, I can understand that. So then, you see, those are seven genders. I can give you that I understand, that can be explained to me, and I respect it.
Yeah.
Right? But I feel like we begin to disrespect these initial communities
when we start going
through, you know, more of these 53 or 57 genders, because I'm like, the struggle of a transgender person is real, man.
Facts.
You know, I can't even fathom to look into what it's like to look into a mirror and loathe, you know, what's staring back at me.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if I still call them my friend or if I call them an acquaintance, right? But someone who was once close to me. Kumo, you'd know who I'm talking about, yeah, because we went to school with this person. But someone who was once really close to me, and now we don't really talk much. But this individual, went to school with them, grew up with them, knowing them as a male.
Yeah.
Right? We went to an all-boys school, so I mean, that in itself is not insulting. We went to an all-boys school, and this person has been in my grade. We're in the same grade, we're in the same class since we were 9-10 years old. As a male, my brother had an all-boys school shop.
Well, was.
At the end of matric, said individual came out to the school publicly as a trans female. And I wasn't too surprised, in the sense that the exploration of self from this individual has been evident since we were 10 years old. You know, I think this individual first came out to me as bisexual or gay when we were in like grade 4, grade 5. And then that later changed to pansexual when they got to understand what that was. And then, you know, there was constant development.
Growth.
And you can tell that in that story, there was a constant search of self.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't think people understand how hard that can be for someone when you're constantly seeking to validate yourself to yourself.
Yeah,
I think it's one thing.
True.
You see, and I'm gonna say, dare I say, I feel that it's actually deeper than the black struggle.
Nah, definitely.
Because the black struggle to me is to validate myself to the next being.
Person, yeah.
Right? Now, when that fight is internal,
it's a very different chat.
So I only have respect for people who a chance and are able to own that and explore that, right? And live their truth. Only have respect for you. But and then we go beyond that conversation, man. And then I get confused because, you know, it seems now to be a mockery of a real life struggle.
Yeah, you know? No, that's true.
Because now you're here, there, everywhere, in between, but nowhere. I'm like, for me, I put that on the same level as blackface, or it's a mockery of what my struggle really is. And I can only, people always say don't compare struggles. Here's the thing, I can only have a conversation based on what I know, because only know what I know, right? So when I see the next person struggle, the how I relate is to, you know, try mirror it to my own struggle and try and understand
how what they're going through,
what you're going through. So I'm like, man, these 57 genders kind of seems like people, you know, the conversation of people copying, you know, black culture, claiming it for their own.
Yeah.
It's the conversation of blackface. It's the conversation of, you know, how infuriating it is when mixed race individuals feel that they can, you know, hip hop in between races when it suits them. They identify more with their blackness, and that's the struggle that they choose, because I'm a person of color, right? And you are. But and then when opportunity arises, your white privilege kicks in and you don't denounce it, right? And that's what I see it as when I see all these different, you know, gender identities. I'm like, you're that individual, the person who, when we were sitting together, you say you recognize my struggle, but at the first moment you have to denounce it and claim your place as the offspring of the oppressor, you do so, and you bask in your glory in doing so. And I'm not saying all people of color are like that, or all people who are mixed race are like this.
That, yeah.
I'm speaking out to specific people who are like that, right? And I'm saying, it just seems so wrong to me. So I don't know, man. Dung, I'm going to pass on to you. I want to hear your view on transgenderism. Where we at, man?
I definitely think what's hard at the moment, and I think it goes in society in general, is that it's so hard to differentiate between those who are affected by the struggle and those who are just doing it to do it. And I think a lot of what happens is then everything gets convoluted as one. So we end up seeing the queer community, or people who end up coming out as being part of the community, as seeking attention, and we don't really know for what it is or how true it is. We don't see it for how true it is or what it is. And I'm like, even then, for me, I'm like, this community is a community that, if you understand what's happened, they've gone through so much. They're constantly affected. I mean, I think without a doubt, daily, there's transgender individuals who are being murdered, who are being hazed. And this goes beyond that. But I think for a lot of us, we overlook their struggle, because we look at what we see on social media, and that tends to be the most mainstream, most fake, most everyone's trying to fit in and be themselves type of thing. When in reality, that's not how most people live. And I think it's the same thing I always say to individuals. I mean, I have the privilege of going to a private school. I say, the fact that we make the idea of being gay such a normal thing in our spaces, when literally everywhere else in our country, individuals are harmed. I mean, one of the biggest issues we have in South Africa is corrective rape. Individuals' dignity is removed from them for being gay, but we get to prance in our privilege and enjoy essentially our own identity, implies that there is an issue in this world. And I think for most people, we get to enjoy the fact, and I want to say this very, like, in a very unique and specific way, most people get to enjoy the ability to say they're fluid, the ability to say they're part of the community and everything, until the time comes for them to stand up for that community and for them to actually feel the struggle and be a part of the struggle. And it's in those moments then that we actually recognize how unreal people are, how fake people are when it comes to the community. And I think in the trans community, I mean, man, I don't know how to explain it. I've heard of it. I've spoken to individuals who are affected by it. I mean, I know someone at St. John's who I have a very, very close relationship to. And I mean, I said something because they wanted to change the uniform, and I said something publicly. And after that moment, I went to go sit down with them. We had a 2-hour conversation about their journey, their path. And it's in those moments you actually realize and recognize how hard it is. I mean, firstly, having to deal with family, having to accept you, what that does to you when your family doesn't accept you. And secondly, having to find who you are and having to engage with that. But then also the fact that, like, so many people look the other way when they know something's being wrong. Like, I find it so problematic that when people come out, there's almost this idea that we just drop the individual. We isolate them because we don't understand and we don't look to understand. And we deem this as normal in society. There's no one who says that we actually should fight back and should actually accept for who they are. But we lose all of those uniquenesses and special stories that happen within those spaces because of everyone else who convolutes it, makes it a popularism thing, makes it a woke thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the problem tends to come in, is that we've lost the power, we've lost the ability to recognize struggle because everyone wants to be a part of some struggle and have their own struggle.
Again, I'll go back to the saying where we say, when a conversation starts and is rooted in absurdity, only absurdity follows. Because when we get to a point where we can have honest conversations about what is truly the next person's struggle, right? And you can have that conversation without disrespecting that individual, then we can have open dialogue about what's realistic and what's not. So I look at debates of trans athletes in sports, right? And I'm logically, as an athlete, I say this debate doesn't make sense. It shouldn't be a debate. Unless, right, like as it is now, the only reason why it is a debate is that it's pushed by an agenda which actually makes a mockery of any common sense within, you know, human history. You cannot have males, right, or biological males, irrespective of your identity. When I call you a biological male, I don't strip away the identity in which you have found for yourself and which you have embraced, right? But we need to understand that at some point your body has developed certain characteristics. And in developing those characteristics, there are certain traits that are, you know, more directed to certain sports as an athlete. So personally, I played rugby. As a rugby player, I know my strengths and I know what it is that, you know, that I can produce on a field. If I was to transition, there is no logical explanation as someone who's played rugby at the level of which I have at my young age that will make sense to me or in society for me to play as a female athlete. You know, it just doesn't make sense. That would be a complete abuse of the system, right? Understanding that the system is in a fragile state where it cannot speak out against me, and because I know that it's in a space of fragility, I will therefore abuse it for my own gain. That's all I see. And I'm not saying that trans athletes are opportunists, but to a large degree, it's kind of rooted, or it seems that that then becomes the outcome. Because, you know, I once heard the question, why do we always talk about trans females, you know, in sports and not trans males? I'm like, sports is about competition, right? And now the biological advantage between or across male and female sports is heavily, you know, weighed in the male's favor. Now, that's not to say that there aren't females that are stronger than some men, and that's not to say that females can't be faster than men. But what that does go to say is that a female at the top of their craft physically, right, will not weigh in comparison to a male at the top of their craft physically.
Fair.
This is not sexism. This is simple biology. The best male athlete in the world and the best female athlete in the world, one-on-one, do not compare. Now, she can be better than me and I'm a male.
Yeah.
Right? That's truth. Right? There are many female rugby players that I'm sure could put me on my ass. Right? But I'm also very sure that if you were to put, you know, Imbogoto, which is our female national side, against, you know, the top high school side, a Paul Roos or Grey College, they would lose 85-0.
Yeah,
right?
Fair.
And that's got nothing to do to speak to the skill level. But remember, like, we talk in sports, we talk about skill level across competition, right?
Yeah.
And the level, a certain level of competition. So if you're great under your own level, you know, level of competition, a certain level, be great in that, but don't chase what's unattainable, right? And that's my thing. So then when we then speak about trans athletes, I'm like, there is a direct loophole in the fact that society is moving in a place where we're trying to be more inclusive, but in trying to become more inclusive and diversify, you know, our social scope in terms of sports, we've now have a gray area where trans athletes are able to tap into female sports. And they are opportunistic, yo, so cool. Because it just doesn't make sense to me that, you know, it's a conversation. Someone who was born a male is going to dominate a female sport,
yeah,
when it's physical. Right, but the same is not true on the inverse. Someone who was born a female and now takes testosterone and is in the process of transitioning or has transitioned to male, unfortunately, is competing up.
Yeah, right?
In the physical space. But when you're male transitioning to female, you're competing down, and that's why we see people who are. I mean, look at the Olympics. We had a gold medalist who was for years an average weightlifter in the males division, transitioned at age 40, 40, right? So this person, as males, we speak about grown man strength, right?
Yeah.
As in bone density, they're set, you can't take it away. Even these men are men who don't gym. You just have bone, grown man strength because of how your body has developed, right?
Yeah.
Now we're talking about grown man strength of a power lifter.
Lord.
At age 40, transitions to female. Now I understand that they take hormone replacement and that they, you know, find your identity. Even if it's at age 40, I salute you on one-on-one personally. Don't compete sports and try claim that you are a female athlete that is at the top of your game. At 40, no athlete is in their prime. The only explanation is that you have an unfair advantage, and that unfair advantage is years of development that surpasses any development that a female can naturally produce, irrespective of your hormone levels, right? So and then what society has now done is that we've removed the logic in our debates, because this person was a gold medalist, broke records, right? And they walked away from the Olympic stage as a medal. And I feel for the women who stood up there in second and third place, because never do you get that moment again. It's 4 years away.
Yeah, you cheated out of an opportunity.
You were cheated out of an opportunity of a lifetime. 4 years in sports is a lifetime. No
That's
one
facts.
Is to say that you're going to be on the same form that you're in now. So for you to get second place at that tournament, who's to say that you're going to be able to put up the same performance again 4 years later and be in the same shape, same condition, or better? Like, it's impossible to say you were robbed in that moment, right? But now the wokest agenda is going to tell you to embrace it. Embrace your failure at the hand of someone who is genetically, you know, I'm going to say, of higher value in regards to the task at hand. right? Someone who's more gifted and more prone to succeed in that situation. It's just simply not fair. And those who use the argument that, but sports is about competition, so the nature of sports is competitive, I'm like, no, it's competitive across a range of, you know, equality to some degree. So that's the same reason we don't have 9-year-olds playing against 12-year-olds in sports.
Sports, fair, fair, fair.
Right? Because 9-year-olds compete against 9-year-olds.
So, I mean, there's two things. Firstly, I just want to read this in context. I mean, we've all heard the story of Caster Semenya, and we've all seen that happen. And Jose understands the science a lot more than me, and the biology a lot more than me. When it comes to that, and she's, so according to what I've known in the conversation that we've had, she's gone through the same development that a boy would go through, considering that she had both female and male anatomy. And a lot of people were arguing whether or not that was a fair run. And look, personally, I think woke me not having heard the conversation, having a long conversation about the actual science behind it, would have said she should run. But like you said, there's a different thing that happens there. And I think we tend to lose sight of the whole conversation, and there's a lot of logic that we lose out on. But what I do want to say, though, which is, I think, is hard to gauge, is I woke me goes to Michael Phelps, and I love the example of Michael Phelps because actually in a book I'm reading, Michael Phelps is what we call genetically gifted when it comes to swimming. He is the right height, short legs, long torso, big feet. People literally call him, he's a walking fish. But what makes Michael Phelps special, which hasn't been seen in many people, is that he produces 50% of the lactic acid that we all do, meaning that he essentially gets tired and is able to I'm trying to use English. What's the word when you rest and then your muscles come back to normal?
Recover.
Yeah, he's able to recover in 50% of the time that we are. So while you're taking time to breathe air and everything, in half that time he's recovering. Michael Phelps is the best Olympic athlete we have seen ever. He's won the most amount of gold medalists in any single sport, and he's won the most amount of races in swimming. He's an individual who's not only been honored, but has also been given this belief that he is essentially the Olympic hero. He's the Olympic legend. And he had this unfair genetic advantage. Now, does the argument become then that on our side, we essentially say to him, or say to people who potentially could be like him, you shouldn't compete because you have a different genetic advantage to everyone else? Or do we say the nature of competition is that we give people with certain genetic advantages the ability to compete? Because I think that's what makes sports so interesting. The fact that people can be developed and built differently, no, but fully, still compete.
Fully. But so here becomes my conversation, right? Or my rebuttal to that. Michael Phelps, one, unknown to him, right? Or until it was discovered, unknown to society, that he had, you know, this development which gave him an advantage. But two, when someone is a genetic freak, they are once in a lifetime athlete that breaks records as a Michael Phelps has, right? Breaks records that is unknown and creates ones that are impossible to be broken by man, right? And that's why they are idolized. I would never advocate for taking that away because, like you say, that's the excitement of sports. That how does he do it, right? We've had those. I mean, one of the guys I played rugby with throughout high school, friend of mine who's now playing rugby in France, Ike Anagu, has looked like somebody's father
since like green.
From the age of like 14, 15, right? And he's just a genetic freak. He is 98 kilos at 10% body fat. It's insane, right? But genetically gifted. That's all that it is, and that's okay. Where I now disagree with the Caster ruling is that, yes, it was unknown to her that she was intersex, right? But unfortunately, this is not an anomaly that
we
have never encountered before in human history. We know what intersex people are, you know, we know what their biological makeup is, and we know the advantages of testosterone in sport, right? So when the conversation is that she has to lower her testosterone levels by going on hormone therapy to equal them with those of her competitors if she wants to compete, I say, I think that that chat is fair.
Yeah.
Right? Where I disagree is in this ruling against Casta, where they say, but she can compete in this race without triggering a testosterone, compete in that race. Then it just seems like the Federation is out to get her. Right? Yeah. And I'm like, I don't understand that, because they have a solid argument when it comes to the simple biology of what the impacts of testosterone on sports. Right? Yeah. And I'm not then saying we have to then test every male to see who has, you know, a higher testosterone level than the next. I just take this back to our previous episodes, or one of our previous episodes, where we talk about different genders, and Kumu and I can agree on 7, intersex being one of them. Intersex people should not be competing on the same stage as females in sport, biological females, because the reality is your development is different. So your genetic capacity is very different, right? And that's a reality. But when you have a conversation rooted, or rather that is, you know, propelled by the wokest agenda, the conversation is going to be like, no, but Casta identifies as a woman. Nobody said she shouldn't. Nobody said she doesn't, right? In society, in everyday life, I praise Casta as a woman who's achieved great things. But now that we've made this discovery that she did not know about herself, right?
No.
How about we act accordingly? Now, people then use the Michael Phelps thing. And I say, Michael Phelps is a genetic anomaly in which we don't have 30,000 people over Game time Phelps, in which we can reference, right? But in Custer's case, people who are intersex make up, yes, a small population of our population, a small percentage of our population. But biologically and throughout history, they've been seen, they've been found, we understand the science behind them. They often manifest as one gender, but hold the, you know, genetic capacity of both.
Both, yeah.
And that's okay, but not in sports, right? So I just think that the moral stance and the logical stance are two different things.
Yeah.
If you ask me from a moral objective, what do I think should happen to Casta? Casta's a woman who identifies as a woman, she let her play in the race. The logical conversation, she shouldn't be stripped because she didn't do anything on purpose. It's her biology, it's how she is, right? But just because she predominantly manifests as a female doesn't entirely make her female. She's intersex, which is something entirely different, right? So therefore, she should, I would say, as far as go through whatever surgery needs to be done to remove certain, you know, internal parts, if that's safe. Obviously, her safety and her well-being is first. If that's safe, and if still needs to be to go into testosterone replacement, or not replacement, but hormone therapy,
then
do that. And I hope that she works her ass off and comes back and still continues to kick ass.
So I think it's odd because, like, I actually know, like, I think Custer's unique. I just need to be fact checked on this one. Custer's unique because she was recognized intersex very early on. So she did, I think she did go through the surgery. But second to that, I actually know someone who's very close to Custer, and she says she refuses to in any instance. And I think it's one of those hard conversations.
But and then the moral stance from that is, as someone who has now made this discovery, do the morally correct thing and take a step back.
No, this is where that's what I was about to touch on. The thing is that historically, if you look at the people who have won, they've been of the same similar build of Custer. So
that you know, argument doesn't apply. Reason being that the technology or the finding was not there at the time, right? unfortunately, the technology is here now. So we can't go back and say they must have, they look how muscular they are, they must have been intersex. I'm like, we can't know that. You know, fair. How many Olympians were on steroids that have broken records? But because the technology at the time could be beat and vetoed, those records stand. How many rugby players who stood as Springbok? I mean, Apiwe Dianti is standing a 4-year trial right now, right? He's not allowed to play rugby because he was caught doping, right, in rugby as a Springbok. I can tell you now, there are Springboks who have won a World Cup for this country who were using steroids throughout high school, were using steroids throughout their professional career, but because the technology was not the same at the time, there was ways around it. You can't drink a cold pill anymore to, you know, pass over a urine sample. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't fill your system with water. The tests are different because, you know, unfortunately, they walked so we can run technologically, right?
Yeah.
So what, how they, you know, how they were able to skip out on being caught through certain tests, those tests have been refined and now people are being caught out. Unfortunately, you can't then look back and say, but look, he probably was doing the same thing. Life doesn't work like that.
So does the conversation not become that we need to hit reset, that we need to start over? Because then the thing is that, like, if we're making sports about the competitiveness and about competing, then there's a need for us to essentially ensure that we're starting from a new foundation, a new basis. Because, I mean, sure, we accept it for what it is. We all say the technology doesn't exist. But then there's a need for someone to say we need to restart. We need to start over. We need to ensure that everyone is under the same foundation. And
I don't know about restart, but you're onto something. I think what should happen is that records should be, you know, set within errors. Because unfortunately, I don't think errors will ever reflect each other equally.
Fair.
Right? Because I can tell you now, like, when older athletes, I'm sorry, they just had easier access to being on steroids and not getting caught.
Yeah.
Right? So they could set unrealistic records.
Yeah.
But the same can be said today to say that, you know, athletes now who are professional have such a, you know, great infrastructure around them that they should be breaking records left, right, and center, because older athletes back in the day didn't have the infrastructure surrounding around sports that athletes do today, just in terms of performance, in terms of conditioning, strength, and all of the above, diet, you know, the knowledge wasn't the same as it is now. So there's going to be constant arguments about that generation has had it better than this generation on this way or that way, right? So I think records should be set in generations, especially when looking at conversations of the greatest within any sport, right? So when you're looking at, like, the top 10 athletes, I don't think it should ever be done across generations.
It should be in an era.
In an era when people had, under the same circumstances, who was most dominant and who broke what record or who set what record. So, and then the question becomes, what determines an era?
Yeah.
Right? And I think that should be what in sports we're looking at. What determines an era? I'd also just like to highlight how this, you know, what you may call it, podcast episode is way off topic right now. And we opened this talking about identity and
now we're sports. Now the whole idea of being misunderstood.
Misunderstood, I guess. Yeah. We probably have to gonna break up this recording into two episodes or release it as one. Who knows?
One complete.
But yeah, I think that's what sports then needs to look at, because I don't think it's fair to to have a list or a rating of people across eras when it was impossible to measure the circumstances of which people performed under. So yeah, but moving back to the topic of identity, we've spoken about transgenders, we've spoken about, you know, intersex people and their place in society and sports. Now I want to speak about, you know, the belief of, you know, again, we're talking about identity. I want people to understand that. And we're not talking about, you know, the LGBTQAI plus community. We're talking about identity. And quite often people have have, you know, labels attached to them which they don't identify with. So, for instance, we're speaking about, you know, wokeism, might labeling someone like myself or someone with the views that I have as transphobic or homophobic, quite simply because you're prepared to question,
yeah,
right? And what I then want to, you know, pose as a topic is, to what extent do we then, you know, claim our own right in our own identity to say it's okay to be who I am and be inquisitive about the next person without being labeled a bigot? Because that's my identity. It's almost gotten to a point within society where as claiming my own identity kind of negates the next person's. And, you know, that's not true in any way.
Yeah.
I can respect you as a trans female or male, or, you know, but also stand right in the fact that I am, and I'm not going to say cisgendered. I don't believe in that bullshit. I'm not cis anything.
I was, you know, I was born a male. Yeah.
And I am proud. Okay, Mio, saying I'm proud is a bit of a crazy one, eh? But like, I was born a male, and this is how I identify, and I see nothing wrong with, you know, the same way I believe you should exercise your own bodily autonomy to be able to express yourself in the way that you feel. I'm a very macho masculine, you know, hyper masculine male, if you'd have me say. And I'm like, I see nothing wrong with it. But why in society, here's my question, phrased longly, why in society do you think that we are now labeled as other? You know, we are put in a box where stating or claiming yourself and not necessarily praising the next person then goes to say that you are negating their existence.
One of the reasons we're othered is to unify our struggle. So the more we can other you, and the more that we can agree you're the enemy, the better we can be together. And I think that's just a simple like logic of anything. Any movement, any belief system, there's always something that needs to be othered for us to believe that we're together, because then it means we're all fighting a united force. But beyond that, I think an interesting take is the idea that labels in and of themselves can have very negative connotations. So even when you said like you're a hyper masculine male, my mind instantly, I don't know if you've ever seen it, went into the, you know, that pyramid of like, what does toxic masculinity look like?
Yeah.
My mind went into that. And it was like,
oh no, best believe, like, in the workest conversation, when we talk about toxic masculinity, they're talking about me.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm fully aware of that. When they talk about toxic masculinity, they talk about me. And here's the thing. I don't give a shit, right?
Facts.
My question is, what's toxic about me understanding what I present myself as in society? And the same way as I'd encourage you to claim your identity is the same way that I encourage mine. By no means do I intend to oppress or be oppressive in nature to the next person. By no nature do I believe that I'm superior to the next individual, because I just believe that this is my personality and this is how I identify within myself. You should be able to do the same for yourself, and life goes on.
I think where the issue comes in is the result of certain identities. And I think that's where a lot of the problems start, right? You as a hyper-masculine male, many people might even consider toxic, don't necessarily have the same adverse impacts that an individual who doesn't recognize their hyper-masculinity would have. So the way you tell people to be true in their identity, to evaluate their identity, and to choose their identity, not every male does that. So subconsciously, what ends up happening is that the belief is you're a hyper male, you're a hyper masculine male, but the practice is also that belief, because you haven't been able to differentiate between who you are and how that essentially results in society. So what you end up finding is you end up finding more males becoming the dominant, I want to control you figure, because they haven't been able to align with their identity because they don't really know what that is. So with you, it's you're comfortable in your identity, so you don't have to prove your identity. With someone else, not being comfortable in the identity, they have to prove it. And if the only way you can prove that identity is by imitating certain actions, taking certain actions, then you feel that you're doing the right thing, which is why an individual like Andrew Tate got so much love, because people recognized he was a hyper male who was comfortable within his identity and didn't have to prove to anyone that his identity was who he was. When in reality, most men who tend to be followers of Andrew Tate have to prove their identity. They have to prove that they are the top G. They have to prove that they are the ones who are going to be on top and going to ask people, what color is your Bugatti? Like, it's in that where the problems start. And I think it's in that where a lot of identity actually becomes problematic and becomes a thing about, I want attention. Because when people start proving their identity, they don't recognize how much harm they're doing.
Yeah.
But moreover, when they prove their identity, they validate their actions, which is why things such as toxic masculinity become a major problem. Because then men start abusing women, because it's a thing of them having control and power.
Okay, so I hear you. When they talk about toxic masculinity, they're not talking about the understanding of self as a hyper masculine male, but they're talking about the insecurity of not being hyper masculine in not being, you get what I'm trying to say, not being hyper masculine to the extent that one can, you know, achieve the respect that they perceive they should be, so they feel the need to enforce that. You know, unfortunately for me, like, I've never thought that, or not unfortunately, fortunately, I've never thought that people should respect me because of my masculinity or how I present myself in society, right? It's always based on how I engage with you on an individual basis, right? And I think that's the difference between, I guess, hypermasculinity and toxic masculinity, is that I want to be evaluated off personal experience, right? Anecdotal experience. So how have I interacted with you? What's your takeaway? And then judge me. Don't judge me on some perception you've drawn because you saw me walking and, hey, that guy walks with his chest out. I'm like, yeah, that's silly stuff. Or, I saw him yelling at his brother and the manner in which he did it, he had a vein popper. He must be a mean person. My relationship with my brother has nothing to do with you.
Yeah. Right?
This guy has tried to throw a kettle at me before and all that. You know, at some point we're going to yell at each other and there might be a vein pop or two.
Yeah.
Right? But that has nothing to do with you. Right? Relate to me in the way that I relate to you.
True.
And that's how you should judge me. That's my thing, because I always say this, and, you know, the leftists those who are more left, that the people that I interact with who fall to the left, that took a while to come out, right? But they tend to judge this. And I always say, I believe that man is a man and will always be a man, and therefore deserves the respect of a man, right? Mm. And a woman is a woman, will always be a woman, and deserves the respect of a woman. But a person is a person and will always be a person and deserves the respect of simply being a person, right? And I always use that in conversations of when it comes to my personal belief on, you know, gender dysphoria and a whole lot of other things that have to do with the spectrum of gender. When I say I don't believe in 57 genders, like when we started this conversation, I now can, you know, positively say that I can stand behind 7 at most, but irrespective of your life decisions and whether or not I understand or agree with them, right? The basis of my interaction with you as an individual is that a person is a person and will always be a person. Therefore, they deserve the respect of being a person. And that should be where it ends, right? So, Khuruwena, you got, you know, blue hair and you are trance this and assist that, like, that doesn't concern me. What concerns me are your values as a person. But when you say that in a woker society, they say, oh no, how dare you, know, disregard my identity. I'm like, I'm not disregarding your identity. I'm saying, do you, right? And I'ma do me. But when we come together, we're not coming together as these separate identities. We're coming together as individuals who are either trying to bond or share mutual respect across a table that has nothing to do with labels.
Yeah.
And that's the society that I want to live in. right, where a white man and a black man can come together, have a conversation about whatever it is, and it not have, you know, racial innuendos thrown in between the conversation, where a straight man and a gay man can have a conversation and it not be, you know, triggered or, you know, by anything that has to do with homophobia or anything of that nature, where, you know, a trans man and a trans female or anyone on whatever spectrum, or, you know, anyone who falls under whatever social construct of identity that is thrown out there to us, when we come together at the end of the day, my belief is that we should respect each other for the pure reason that we stand across each other as fellow humans. Nothing else. Right? And I hope that this isn't highlighted as a bigoted rant. Yeah. Because I know what the left can do. Right. So, you're Nimuzwile. Actually, you don't exist. I never said that. I can already see it. But Ati, you don't exist. Ati, he doesn't recognize. No. I recognize it and I praise it for you over there. Do you. But don't feel the need to impose it on me. Because I don't understand it. Right? Mm. But it shouldn't matter that I don't understand it.
Yeah, that's true. Right?
What should matter is that we're not as a person. Nyakhlonipha. Nyakubona as umuntu. Nothing else. But yeah, I'm going to leave it here from my side today. I'm going to pass on to my brother. Hopefully he has some closing remarks for us. Or maybe he still wants to elaborate. I don't know. I think I've shared my piece on this conversation.
Yeah, I think I'm going to close it there. I mean, I think he said it well. I think the fact that we just see each other, we be with each other, and we recognize each other for who we are, not for the labels which we hold, but for who we are, is where we become one. We become unified, and we stop paying attention to everyone's identity. And it's not about identity politics, but just simply about us and being one. And I think the beauty is that in a world like this, it's going to take forever. But in a world like this, the people who try and do that on a day-to-day basis are the people we recognize as being leaders, as being the thinkers of the world. And I think, like you said, the beauty of this all is that there's going to be a world where we can one day sit across from each other and be people, and people in every sense. And I know this utopia seems far and life seems hopeless a lot of the time. But it's for the people who still hold that hope that one day we can all just have a conversation and finally be one with each other and be understood, that we find the world that we can all live in, that we all feel comfortable in, and that doesn't discriminate, looks to be prejudiced individuals, homophobia, racism, everything that tries to spew hatred, and we simply become one. But I don't want to say anything else. Hopefully you've enjoyed this episode. It's been a whirlwind. This is Kumo Kumalo signing out.
Once again, I am your man, Khosidile Mashogane. As we say to the world, all we wish is peace, love, and prosperity. Until next time, the word is salute.